Welcome to the Muni Lowdown Podcast. My name is Paul Graves, and I'm the managing editor for DebtWire Municipals. Joining me is one of our great reporters, Simone Barabo, and our head of research, Greg Clark. Hi to Simone and Greg.
Good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
Well, the podcast title for today's episode is Forbearance Fortitude. Today, we'll be discussing three situations where a forbearance agreement was either established or under consideration. These credits are the Puerto Rico Electric Power Authority, also known as PREPA, and it'll be referred to as such for the remainder of the podcast, the American Dream Meadowlands Project, and Catholic Health of Buffalo. So a forbearance agreement is basically an agreement that creditors will not pursue options that are legally available to them, such as bond acceleration, in order to give a borrower time to get its financial house in order. So let's start with PREPA, Simone, talking about financial houses. They've been trying to get that in order for quite a few years now. But where do things stand now? And just give us an overview of that situation.
In general, I'd say bondholders have had very, very few wins recently. And it's a little ironic because if you can remember way back when the bankruptcy started, PREPA was the one that was going to lead the way. It was going to be a kind of blueprint for the others. And not only have the four other Puerto Rico entities in Title III already emerged, but from a bondholder perspective, PREPA has really fallen apart.
So how so?
Initially, more than 5 years ago, PREPA and bondholders had a restructuring support agreement. And so PREPA's case just sort of sat for years with the idea that eventually this deal would be solved amicably. And then in March 2022, Governor Pierluisi ditched the agreement. And the oversight board argued a few months later, basically, that the bonds were backed by nothing other than a few million in some tiny sinking funds. This was a surprise to bondholders. And bondholders called these claims absurd. PREPA was supposed to be backed by net revenue. They were supposed to be able to put a receiver in place to get the money, either by raising rates or taking whatever steps were needed. But now the argument basically was, in a bankruptcy, you're better off being an unsecured creditor than a bondholder.
And so for our listeners, that's Governor Pedro Pierluisi of Puerto Rico. So why the change, Simone?
You know, Judge Laura Taylor Swain, who was overseeing the bankruptcy, asked the oversight board's lawyers exactly that in a hearing late last year. And part of the reason seems to be that the members of the oversight board, four of them, changed. And at that point, the oversight board determined that the issues that the unsecured creditors committee had been arguing for years regarding bond claims were valid. And so they reversed course. But even though Judge Swain seemed initially like she may have been a bit frustrated that the oversight board waited 5 years to figure out that the bonds were actually backed by essentially nothing, she's sure been pretty sympathetic to their arguments recently.
Has she made any rulings?
Yes, she's agreed with the oversight board that the bonds are secured by virtually nothing. But she said that the bonds were at least unsecured claims, and I'm quoting, to be liquidated by reference to the value of future net revenues. Now, I guess this could be worse for bondholders. The oversight board had argued that they weren't even unsecured claims. They were nothing. So if Judge Swain had agreed with that, it would have meant the bonds would have been basically worthless. But bondholders have a face value of debt of around $8.5 billion. And the language I just quoted means that bondholders don't have $8.5 billion in unsecured claims. They have to calculate what the value of future net revenues is, which is presumably something less than $8.5 billion.
And then they'll be paid that amount?
No. So they're taking two cuts. First, they'll calculate the amount of their unsecured claim. So at that point, there'll be some additional cuts. So for instance, maybe after they finish estimating the value of future net revenues, their claim will be $6 billion. I'm completely making this number up. And then it's an unsecured claim, so maybe they'll get paid 50 cents on the dollar, so that will be $3 billion. Again, I've made all these numbers up, but just to illustrate that there are two separate cuts that they're taking.
So I'm going to go out on a limb and say that bondholders probably aren't happy about these developments.
I imagine that you're right. They've asked to be able to appeal the decision immediately. Of course, the oversight board and fuel line lenders have pushed back, saying that an immediate appeal is unnecessary, and the appeals court won't have a full picture of what the estimation process looks like and what the final plan looks like. So they're arguing it's premature, and in any case, there's so much else to litigate right now that adding this is just burdensome. Judge Swain hasn't yet ruled on whether they'll have to wait on an appeal.
Well, it doesn't sound like things have been going all that well for bondholders. Have they seen any wins?
Not really. They've been pretty pummeled with losses. It's clear at this point Judge Swain isn't messing around. She wants this wrapped up this summer. So when bondholders have asked for more time or to start discovery early, she's been inclined to say no. She initially declined to clarify a portion of her order on the bond security. And then when it became clear this was a major sticking point, she didn't adopt bondholders' interpretation of her words. And she approved the disclosure statement over bondholder objections that the plan is patently unconfirmable. In part, bondholders were arguing that was because National Public Finance Guarantee Corporation was getting a much higher payout than other bondholders and insurers, simply because it agreed to stop suing if it got that deal. It's not at all clear that anyone else was offered the same deal. And generally, similarly situated creditors have to be paid equally. So there was a chance that for this reason, or because bondholders were forced to choose between a litigating or settling class very early in the process, also obviously over bondholder objections, or for a number of other reasons, that the disclosure statement wouldn't be approved. But it was. Now, bondholders can still argue all of these things at the confirmation hearing, so they may yet win the war, but they are sure losing a lot of battles.
So it doesn't look like bondholders are any closer to being paid than they were a few months ago.
Nope, it sure doesn't. But a lot of current bondholders bought these things at a steep discount. So even if these rulings hold, the size of their losses isn't as bad as it would have been if they were the original holders.
Yes, but $8.5 billion is a lot of money to default on. Can you think of any others of that size?
It sure is a huge default. And no, I can't think of any others outside of other Puerto Rico entities anywhere near that size. But there is another big default, which is the American Dream. And that's the Mega Mall up in New Jersey. It has a mall and then just sort of insane attractions, roller coasters, ski slopes, a water park. And it's got a couple billion dollars in debt that it's not paying. At one point, this is an aside, but they were talking about opening up a mall down here in Miami, and I had to laugh because one of the proposed attractions was an indoor beach. You can say a lot of things about living in Miami these days, but one argument that it is very difficult to make is that we need another beach. Our outdoor beaches are awesome.
Yeah, that is. That's a bit curious that they would try to build an indoor beach down in Miami. But okay, but are there other lawsuits regarding the defaults?
Most of the debt is covered by a forbearance agreement, but there was one recent lawsuit where junior lenders who are owed almost $400 million sued basically to get a court to order American Dream to pay the money back. They got that on summary judgment. American Dream didn't even file a response in that action. And you also have a municipality that the mall is located in suing American Dream, which allegedly hasn't been making its payments in lieu of taxes. According to the borough of East Rutherford, American Dream argues that it doesn't owe the payments yet because it's not yet open for business to the general public. And East Rutherford said that this position is indefensible. American Dream opened in 2019. Yes, it shut down for a few months because of COVID, but it's been reopened for a while. It has had millions of people visit and earned hundreds of millions in revenue. So East Rutherford is asking for the $7.5 million that American Dream owes it.
Yeah, that American Dream project has been star-crossed from the beginning. Right after the triumphant opening, 3 months later, or maybe more like 4 or 5 months, the pandemic comes and it closes down and becomes a place for people to go get COVID testing. So that's been an interesting project, one we'll definitely keep up with. But Greg, let's switch gears. Let's take things over to the hospital side with Western New York State, the Catholic Health of Buffalo. What's going on there?
Paul, Catholic Health of Buffalo is a healthcare system that owns and operates hospitals, urgent care centers, and other facilities in Erie and Niagara counties in Western New York State. It's a pretty good sized system, over 1,000 licensed beds. We first took a look at Catholic Health in October of last year when we noted that they faced the possibility of 2 consecutive years in which their debt service payments would not be covered by current revenues.
Now, that sounds like it has to be a violation of a financial covenant, which would be pretty serious. Am I right about that? And what happens if they did go 2 years in a row without covering debt service?
Indeed, you are right. It's a violation of the rate covenant, and bond documents indicate that two consecutive years of debt service coverage that's less than one times, in other words, where net revenues are insufficient to meet debt service, would be an event of default that could lead to an acceleration of outstanding bonds, and in turn, that could lead to a bankruptcy filing.
So we discussed them back in October of 2022. What's happened since?
Well, just to go back a bit to give the complete picture of how we've covered them, in October 22, we knew they had failed the coverage test in fiscal year 21, which ended on December 31st. All of their fiscal years, of course, end with the calendar year. We also had interim financials for the first 6 months of 2022, which showed that they were likely to fail the coverage test for that year as well. So then we review them again in December of last year, when we had 10 months of financial results and the situation hadn't improved. Our most recent review was published earlier this month on the 13th. And at that point, final but unaudited results were in for all of 2022. And we found that the borrower's operating deficit for that year was $105 million compared to a loss of $100 million in 2021 and $12 million in 2020. This resulted in much less than one times coverage, negative coverage of 4.9 times in 2022, a worse situation than 2021's negative coverage of 4.6 times. Coverage in 2020 was positive at 1.2 times.
So what's driving Catholic Health's financial problems?
Well, management indicates there are several factors at work, one of which was a revenue shortfall in 2022 that occurred due to a lower than expected number of surgeries. And affecting surgical volumes in turn was a lack of anesthesiologists and some COVID-related restrictions that were imposed by the state of New York during the first quarter of 2022. If you remember the Omicron variant of COVID, which seems like a long time ago now, that was in the first quarter of 2022, and that's what led the state to impose those restrictions. Another problem was greater than budgeted expenses, which resulted from continued reliance on higher cost temporary nurses and from the effects of inflation on drugs and other supplies.
So what is management doing to remedy these situations?
They have expanded recruitment to full-time registered nurses, and there are now lower turnover rates for existing RNs. So that's allowed Catholic Health's management to decrease its use of temporary nurses. Also, the availability of anesthesiologists has improved.
Okay, we're still dealing with the potential acceleration of bond principle. Am I right?
Well, the borrower disclosed on February 28th that it was negotiating with bondholders for approval of a forbearance agreement. It's probably in bondholders' interest to enter such an agreement, since, as we mentioned, a bond acceleration could lead to a bankruptcy, a situation that would probably result in bondholders being paid less than par for their bonds.
Any possibility this can be resolved quickly?
Well, I have my doubts. The system has some pretty big problems, it seems, and I think it's going to take a while for them to right their fiscal ship, so to speak. I may be wrong. Places bounce back more frequently than you might think sometimes, but we plan on covering Catholic Health on a quarterly basis. Well, we have been covering it quarterly pretty much, and we're going to continue to do so.
All right. Well, thanks, Greg, and thank you, Simone, and thanks, everyone, for listening to the Mooney Lowdown. Please support us by liking, sharing, and or subscribing on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Join us every Thursday for the latest drop of the Mooney Lowdown. Take care.